The spiritual disruptors come in and they say, it will never be perfect. There'll always be something missing. The spiritual disruptors come in and they say, to be happy, people say you need wealth, time, and health. When you're young, you have time, you have health, yeah, I mean wealth, frustration. When you're in middle age, you have wealth, you still have your health, ain't got any time, frustration. When you're old, you have loads of time, you have loads of wealth, you don't have your health anymore, frustration. The spiritual disruptors come in and say, whatever you do in this world, you'll be snookered. You won't satisfy the heart. You won't find the satiation of your consciousness that you're looking for. And the spiritual disruptors come in and say 99.9% of people will just accept it. And say, you gotta accept it. That's life. But the spiritual disruptors come in and say, there's one person that may come forward out of many thousands and say, I don't want to settle for a type B happiness. I don't want to settle for second-class happiness, pleasure. I want to try and find out whether there's something beyond all of that. And those are the people that begin the spiritual journey. Chair Matteo, for your kind introduction. And thank you so much to all of you coming here. When you said I'm from Wembley, that could be a disqualification. But yes, I did emerge from Northwest London, and I guess begun my spiritual journey, as all of us do, all of us here in this room. It comes to a point in life where we begin to question on a little bit of a deeper level. And for me, that moment came, I guess, when I was about 15 years old. And I began reading a beautiful book, which some of you may be familiar with, called the Bhagavad Gita. And nearly 30 years later, I'm still studying that book, still learning, still a student. I don't come in front of you claiming that I have all the answers, but I can hopefully share with you many things that have touched my heart, improved my life, and given me deep insight into the world and how to find happiness. And I'll try to share some of that with you tonight. It will be very informal. I'll share some words and then I'll kind of open it up pretty quickly and see whether you may have any thoughts or questions or things on your mind that you would like to discuss. Is that okay? Yeah? Okay, wonderful. Before we begin, we'll just offer some Sanskrit prayers. And the reason we do this before beginning any kind of spiritual discussion is because this knowledge is not so much understood on the level of the intellect. To understand spiritual knowledge, you don't need a BSc, a BA, a PhD, or incredible intellectual or analytical abilities. What we really need is just to have an open heart, a heart that is seeking truth, a heart that is seeking to serve, a heart that is seeking to experience true love. And as we are able to open our hearts, then that knowledge and that wisdom sinks into a deeper space within our consciousness. And so traditionally, before we begin any discussion, we just say some prayers in which we try to open our hearts in this way. So I'll just recite a few Sanskrit prayers. If you know the prayers, you can follow along. Otherwise, you can just close your eyes and try to meditate on opening your heart and being available to this knowledge. When we want to go from one place to another, the last thing we want to do is have disruption, isn't it? That is one of the most annoying things in the world. When you're trying to get from one place to another, and something disrupts you. It's amazing, even when you drive from one place to another, there can be so many disruptions. The interesting thing is that sometimes the government deliberately put disruption on the road. Have you noticed? When you drive, there are speed bumps. They're annoying. When you drive on a road, sometimes there's like a restricted entry and you got to slow down unless you want to wreck your side mirror. When you drive, there are traffic lights. It's amazing. When you want to go from one place to another, the last thing you want is disruption. But by the very arrangement of the government, there is disruption. There are all of these things which slow us down. And why are they there? Why do they slow us down? Because if they weren't there, then we'd just go so fast and become incredibly mindless. And when we're mindless, we do harm to others and we do harm to ourselves. Therefore, although disruption is annoying, disruption is required. Because if there was no disruption, then we'd just, the motto of our life would be going nowhere fast. Therefore, in every activity, there is generally some disruption. In the history of the world, there were also many, many disruptors who came into the world, who started to talk about things and do things and present things which was challenging the way people normally did it. Generally, we don't like to change. Generally, we're in a flow of going in a certain direction. And when a disruptor comes and says, no, no, there's a different way to do it, then we don't like that. Yet, some of the people, some of the initiatives that caused the most disruption in the world, the biggest disruptors of our time, are people that we worship now, knowingly or unknowingly. If I was to ask you, can you think of some of the biggest disruptors in the world who changed the way we do entertainment, changed the way we live, changed the way we function in our life? Can you think of anyone? Who would you say is that one of the biggest disruptors of our time? Anyone want to say? Louder?
Bill Gates.
Bill Gates. Yes.
Malcolm X.
Malcolm X. Anyone else?
Steve Jobs.
Steve Jobs, Apple, think different.
Donald Trump.
Donald Trump. I won't say anything about him at this point. Yeah.
David Bowie.
David Bowie.
Michael Jackson.
Michael Jackson, heal the world. Yeah, so many people, even if we look in the business world. Apple changed the way, disruptor, changed the way we look at technology. Uber, disruptor, changed the way we look at transport. Netflix, disruptor, changed the way we think about movies and entertainment. Tesla, disruptor, changed the way we think about what cars should be and what cars can do. Amazon, disruptor, change the way we look at how we do shopping. Airbnb, disruptor, change the way we look at accommodation. All of these initiatives, all of these people were disruptors. They came in and they said, no, there's a different way to do it. And everyone was like, no, no, we're okay. We've been doing it like this for ages. Blockbuster thought, no, no, we've been doing it like this for ages. We don't need to adapt. We don't need to change. And Netflix came in and said no and kicked them out of the market and revolutionized everything. Don't worry, I'm not going to give you an MBA class this evening. I'm going to get onto the spiritual point in a minute. But what I'm saying to you is that there is disruption in the world, and although it's uncomfortable, later on, we realize it's incredibly beneficial, because what it does is it upgrades life. It teaches us a better way to live, a better way to do things. Yet all of these disruptors, how much did they actually disrupt our life in a deep way? In life, there is the why of something that we're doing. Then there is the what, the activities that we do in order to achieve that goal. And then there is the how, the actual day-to-day stuff that we do in order to achieve it. There's the why, the how, and the what. All of these material disruptors, what they did is they changed the how and the what. The how of what we live and the what in terms of the activities that we do every day. Yet in depth, they didn't really change anything in terms of the way we think. However, there are different types of disruptors that have come over the course of human history. Spiritual disruptors. And what spiritual disruptors do is they come in and they start getting everyone to question the why. One company can come in and say, we challenge the how and the what. But the spiritual disruptor comes in and says, let's look at the why. Let's look at why you're even doing this in the first place. The spiritual disruptors over the course of history come into the world, and what they do is they have an incredible message. And you know what their message is? If enough people tell a lie, then that lie becomes a truth. If enough people accept that truth for enough amount of time, then that truth becomes a culture. And if that culture is then perpetuated from one generation to the next, it becomes a tradition. And then people are born into that tradition and begin following a so-called tradition that's based on a so-called culture, that's based on a so-called truth that's actually a lie. And so the spiritual disruptors over the ages come into the world and they get us to look back and question, why? Why are you doing this? Why do you hold this as such an important thing in your life? Why do you think that this will bring you happiness? Why do you react and respond to certain situations in stereotyped ways? And by questioning the why, by starting with the why, the spiritual disruptors come in and they make us explore and dig a little deeper and question and challenge ourselves in terms of our life direction, in terms of our aspirations, our goals, and it's uncomfortable. Because already in our life, we invested so much time and energy in moving in a certain direction, and then the spiritual disruptor comes in and says, but why are you doing this? But those people that are brave enough to challenge themselves and ask the question, why? Although it's uncomfortable, it begins to upgrade their life in an incredible way. And therefore, wisdom teachers, spiritual teachers across the generations, they're the biggest disruptors because they challenge the why. You see, like all of you, you can do this. You can do a circle like this. You can do this. Yeah, it's an experiment. You can do it. Right? See this? Like you do a circle like this. Now I want to see if you make the observation, right? Then what you gradually do, right? The circle's going like this. I want you to gradually go higher. Keep going in the same way. Now go above you. We're all going to be flying soon. Okay, now look above your head. Can you see? Can you see what's changed? We're going to keep going until someone finds the answer. Can you see what's changed? The circle's smaller. The direction. The direction, have you noticed? The direction has changed. You began going clockwise, but as you change the perspective, it's now anti-clockwise. That's what spiritual disruptors do. Yeah, don't worry, you can do it at home and check. It's like, no, I think he's lying.
Really?
It works, trust me. That's what spiritual disruptors do. We're looking at life in a certain way. And then what they do is they come in and disrupt the whole thing. And they give you a whole different perspective. And now your whole perspective has changed. And that's uncomfortable. But it's also incredibly empowering, because it unlocks a potential of discovering something that otherwise you would never have discovered in your life. Once there was a businessman, and he came to kind of this Caribbean, kind of secluded place in the Caribbean, a beautiful kind of beach by the sea, and there was one boatman, and he was sitting underneath the tree. And the businessman just looked at him and said, What are you doing? What do you do all day? He goes, I ride some people over this side of the river to that side of the river. And the businessman said, how long have you been doing this for? He said, this is what I've been doing my whole life. The businessman looks at him and says, why don't you do it today, and tomorrow from the profit that you make, buy a second boat? The boatman said, why would I want to do that? He said, because then you can hire a second person and then do double the boat rides and you can make more money. And he said, well, why would I want to do that? Because then with the extra money, the businessman said, you can buy another two boats. And the boatman said, and then what will I do? And then he said, look, then you can employ more people, and eventually you can have a fleet of 30 boats and you can register a company. And why would I want to do that? Because then you can make more money, and then you can expand to other parts of the beaches, and then you can go national. And why would I want to do that? Because then eventually when you get big enough, you can have franchises all over the world. And then why would I want to do that? Because then you can make enough money, and then you can retire. And why would I want to do that? Well, once you're retired and you have enough money, you can come to Barbados and just chill out on the beach. He said, I'm already doing it. Interesting. We may not be that dissimilar to the businessman in our approach to life. Because maybe in our life we focus so much on the how and the what that we pursue all of these activities. And then later on we think, why? Why am I pursuing all these things? So therefore, coming together here in a place like this, where we can take some time and disconnect from the world and spiritually disrupt our life by exploring beyond what everyone else is doing out there day to day without questioning it, that is very, very beneficial. That is very, very valuable, because that can upgrade your life in an incredible way. And so here we are today, and of the many books of spiritual disruption, I can share with you that the Bhagavad Gita, which is an incredible life manual, shares so many insights which make us think completely differently about life and the way we're living life. In the Bhagavad Gita, there are 18 chapters, there are 700 verses, they're all written in Sanskrit, which is considered the mother of all languages, incredibly complex and beautiful language as well. And the 700 verses are split up into 18 chapters. We could say that 18 chapters are split up into three sections: the first six, the middle six, and the final six. The first six essentially teach you the yoga of how to live in the world. The middle six chapters essentially teach you the yoga of how to love. And the final six chapters of the Bhagavad Gita essentially teach you the yoga of how to let go. In Sanskrit, the yoga of how to live is known as karma yoga. The yoga of how to love is known as bhakti yoga. And the yoga of how to let go is known as jnana yoga, the yoga of knowledge. If you learn these three things, how to live, how to love, and how to let go, you will not walk through this world, you'll float through this world. And what Krishna does in the Bhagavad Gita is, as I said, he begins to challenge in every single chapter the way we live our life and the way we've approached life. So you could take, like, from every single chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, a theme of how Krishna challenges us. And maybe we can experiment and do a few of them here today, and then I'll open it up and see what questions you may have. So let me give you a taste of how Krishna challenges us. There are many ways to look at the Bhagavad Gita, but this is one way to look at the Bhagavad Gita, that in every single chapter, Krishna teaches you to think differently. So I want someone to give me a number between 1 and 18, and I'll try to share with you in that chapter how Krishna teaches us to think different. Is anyone inspired from their heart to give me a number? There was someone there. Yeah.
12.
Okay. So chapter number 12 of the Bhagavad Gita. How does this teach us to think differently in the world? The sutra I want to give you for the 12th chapter. The world teaches you have a to-do list, but the Bhagavad Gita teaches you have a to-be list. Now this is the shift of thinking that Krishna gives in the 12th chapter of the Gita. Why? And I'll explain what it is, but why? Because if you look in the 12th chapter verses, Krishna begins to explain what kind of character will bring you happiness in your life. You want to see some of the characteristics that will make you happy in your life? This is 12:14. Krishna says, "One who is not envious, but is a kind friend to all living entities. One who does not think himself the owner. One who is free from false ego. One who is equal in both happiness and distress. One who is tolerant, satisfied, self-controlled. Such a devotee is very dear to me," Krishna says. So what happens in this chapter is Krishna begins to outline all of the characteristics and qualities of the most highly successful spiritualists. And therefore, what the 12th chapter is stressing is don't just have a to-do list in your life. Have a to-be list. What qualities do you want to live your life by? What character do you want to be known by? You know, as monks, when we entered the monastery, one of the regular meditations we would do is we would meditate on our own funeral. You think, like, what? That sounds morbid. But what we would do, one of the monks would take us fast forward and we'd visualize our own funeral. And in our funeral, we would then visualize who would come forward to give the eulogy of our life. And then what we would do in the meditation is we would try to write the eulogy of our life that we'd like to be remembered for. And then what we would do is we would come out of the meditation and we would say, this is how I want to be remembered. Now, what have I done the last week, the last month to become this person? And then we'd realize we have a to-do list, but we don't have a to-be list. At the end of life, people won't remember you for your achievements. People won't remember you for the letters behind your name or the numbers on your social media. But what people will remember you for is your character, your qualities, the way, the impression you left on their heart. So in the 12th chapter, Krishna says, think differently, challenge yourself. Don't just go out into the world and judge the success of a day by how many things you did. Judge the success of the day by what you became, by what you exuded, by what kind of character you had. And in that way, Krishna challenges us in the 12th chapter to change the way we think. Don't just have a to-do list. Have a to-be list. Anyone else want to give me a number between 1 and 18? Anyone inspired? Yeah.
9.
Okay. So 9 is right in the middle of the Bhagavad Gita. And Krishna says some amazing things in chapter number 9. But let me share one of the amazing things that Krishna says in the 9th chapter. And I'll say it in Sanskrit because I think it's nice for you to hear the Sanskrit. Krishna says, Patram pushpam phalam toyam yo me bhaktya prayachati tadaham bhakti uparitam ashnami prayatat manaha. Krishna says, if one offers me with love and devotion a leaf, a flower, fruit, or water, I will accept it. Now you may think, what's so revolutionary about that? This is revolutionary. Because what Krishna is saying is that love is created by service. Love is created by giving. Love is generated through selflessness and sacrifice. Love is not so much about what you give, but it's the purity and the sincerity and the devotion with which you give it. The world teaches you, ask God for what you want, isn't it? People go to God with a shopping list. I want a house by the sea, a color TV, a 15 gigabyte million MP3, whatever it may be. The world teaches you, ask God for what you want. The Bhagavad Gita teaches you, give God what He wants. Now you may say, I don't believe in God and all these things. But just replace that with any relationship. Don't ask your partner for what you want, but give your partner what they want. Serve, give, because that's where love is generated. And in any relationship, the depth of the relationship is based on the depth of selflessness in that relationship. So in this way, Krishna is saying, approach relationships in a different way. Why do relationships fail in the world today? Why are divorce rates higher than ever before? Why do people come together and then break that relationship over seemingly small things? Because in all relationships, it's based on selfishness. We're only with that person because we're getting something from them. But in a relationship, when you begin to give, when you're selfless, when you're ready to make a sacrifice, then that inspires selflessness, sacrifice within the other person. And you know what? When that kind of dynamic goes on, then a relationship becomes extremely deep. And so, in the 9th chapter, Krishna is shifting our approach to relationships. Don't see what you can get, but see what you can give. Okay, we'll do one more. Anyone else inspired to give us a number between 1 and 18? 3. Okay. So the 3rd chapter of the Bhagavad Gita is entitled Karma Yoga. Karma means action. And in this chapter, Krishna is basically talking about the art of how to work in this world. And so, in these verses, Krishna talks about I'll just share one verse with you. Krishna talks about detached work. So I'm going to read a verse for you. Krishna says, therefore, without being attached to the fruits of activities, one should act as a matter of duty, for by working without attachment, one attains the supreme. This is a revolutionary concept. If you're able to work in the world and try your best without being affected by the result of what you get, then you will actually achieve amazing things. The world teaches you, be the best. Krishna teaches you, try your best. In the world today, people are, they feel so much overburdened by stress, burnout, and so many other things because they're attached to the result of their activities. But what Krishna here is saying in the Bhagavad Gita is that you have no control over the results of your activities. The only thing you have control over is the endeavor and the effort that you put in. So success is not in getting a result. Success is in doing the best you can. And once you do the best you can, if the result turns out in a different way to what you expected, then we can take confidence in the fact that there's a higher plan of providence which is moving my fortunes in that way, because I tried my best and still it went in a different direction. Yet when we judge our success on the result, then we become depressed, we become anxious, we end up comparing with others, competing with others, we end up feeling inferiority complex, all of these things, because we judge our success on the result. But Krishna says, the goal of life is not to be the best. The goal of life is simply to try your best. And so you can see here, I'm just giving you some samples of how Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita begins to shift the way that we look at life. So the Bhagavad Gita is a book of spiritual disruption. And although sometimes disruption is uncomfortable because it shakes the very principles on which we've been living, you come out of that much wiser and with a much deeper vision of what life can and should be. And so these are, I guess, some thoughts that I wanted to share with you today. And rather than giving a long, long talk, I can maybe open it up now and ask some of you whether you may have any questions or comments or reflections or anything you'd like to clarify based on some of these points that we've discussed so far today. So yes, anyone like to? Yes.
So I have a question. You said we should not have a to-do list, but to-be list. And then you see that love is generated by service, by doing something. So how is there the balance between doing service for others and at the same time be?
Okay, right, yeah. So when I said what I was, maybe I didn't make that clear. It's not that we shouldn't have a to-do list. I also have a to-do list. I have a diary as well. We shouldn't just have a to-do list. Along with a to-do list, we should have a to-be list. And that connects with relationships because, yes, we must do things for others. But we must do things from the heart. We must do things with a genuine consciousness of wanting to serve others. When you do that, you see what touches people the most is not so much even the act of what you do, but it's the love with which you do it. When a parent gives a child $20 to go out into the store and buy a birthday present that eventually the child buys and then offers back to the parent, then the parent is incredibly happy the fact of the matter is they paid for it. But it's not so much the act of giving or the actual thing that they gave, but it's the love with which it was offered that really touches the heart. So yes, the activities that we do are the vehicles. They're the vehicles of expressing the love. But all of the acts, if they're not inhabited with the genuine consciousness of wanting to serve the other people, then you have all these vehicles, but you have nothing in it. It's empty. And that doesn't move people's hearts. So therefore, yes, by all means, act, do things, but realize that the actions are just the vehicle. The real thing is the intent that those activities are invested with that will touch someone's heart. Does that help? Yes. Anyone else like to ask any questions or... Yes.
Okay, yeah. So you said that Krishna is a disruptor and he challenges us, right? What if Krishna challenged your faith in the Bhagavad Gita or your faith in general? How would you approach something like that where your very foundation of thought is based and Krishna challenged that?
Yeah. Well, at the end of the Bhagavad Gita, there's a very, very beautiful statement. And in Sanskrit, after speaking the whole Bhagavad Gita, Krishna looks at Arjuna and what does he say? Iti te jnanam akhyatam guyat guyataram maya vimrashe tadasheshena yathechasi tathakuru. After speaking the entire Bhagavad Gita, Krishna looks at Arjuna, who's the listener, and he says, I've revealed all the knowledge to you. Vimrasheta dasheshena in Sanskrit means think about it, challenge it, analyze it, reflect on it, introspect about it. And then what does Krishna say? Yata icha tathakuru, and then do what you want to do. Which is an incredible statement. Because Krishna, he gives all of this wisdom, and then what Krishna says to Arjuna is that you don't have to accept it just because I said it. You don't have to take it just on my word. In fact, you don't even have to do anything with this if you don't want to. You do what you want to do. But Krishna is saying, just one thing I'm asking you to do is think about it, challenge it, and introspect on it. And therefore, Krishna is the first person who wants us to exercise our intelligence, who wants us to doubt, who wants us to question. In fact, if you look at the Bhagavad Gita, it's not a unidirectional dialogue. There is questions, there is answers, there are challenges, there are confusions that need to be cleared, and Krishna is welcoming it. So spiritual life and spiritual disruption doesn't mean a blind acceptance or a blind faith, but rather it means an awakening of our intellectual, analytical abilities to really question life. The problem with the world is not that people are thinking too much. The biggest problem in the world is that people aren't thinking at all. And therefore, Krishna is the first one to come in and say, think about it. I want you to think. I want you to awaken your intelligence. Disraeli says, some people think, and most people would rather die than think. Right? So like we just... So, and it's a very good point you make, because even when we come to a spiritual place, we can also, even in this scenario, have this kind of tendency to just switch off our intelligence and just go with the flow and accept it. But we don't. Even Krishna doesn't want you to do that. Krishna wants you to come and challenge it. So yeah, I think Krishna would be an advocate of challenging.
So it's a continuation of your answer actually to the previous question. So you were saying that your actions or your to-do list is your vehicle to achieve your to-be. So if you want to be in a certain way, and then you're attempting
for your to-do, to, like...
To be something, yeah, yeah.
Yes. And then you encounter a situation where it hurts you, and I'm sure that has to do with you're attached to the fruit of that activity. But in that moment, you're very confused, and you're just like, oh my God, have I done something wrong? Is my to-do not wise enough, maybe? So how do you navigate such a situation, and what is happening there?
Yeah, so say for example, let's just take a live example. Like say for example, on your to-be list is that you want to be tolerant, right? So then on your to-do list, you have a certain, you know, you react to situations in certain ways that you think will help you to develop tolerance. But then sometimes those actions that you're doing to develop tolerance make you even more intolerant, right? Like that could happen. So the first thing is, if you want to know the connections between what activities help to develop what characteristics, that's why the ancient wisdom of ancient literatures is so powerful. Because often we think certain activities will develop certain qualities, but we need guidance from enlightened sources to make that connection and then try it out. So the first thing I would say is, your to-do that connects to your to-be should be orientated by higher wisdom. That's the first thing. But the second thing is that you are right, that we just, you know, they say it's easier to act your way into a new way of thinking than think your way into a new way of acting. Right? So there is a sense in which we mirror through our activities the person that we want to eventually be. But we just have to make sure we have enough of a support system around that so that on that journey to actually becoming that person, we don't become displaced. So, yeah, I mean, there's lots to say on this, but those are some thoughts. I don't know how much time we have. There's more questions. You can tell me when to stop.
Maybe one more question.
One more question. Okay, yeah.
Thank you, Guru Maharaj. I'm actually pretty shaking because your wisdom and your knowledge came with such clarity. So, yeah, my question is that it's rather a personal question because... the way I observe people is that they all have their own realities and they all sort of know their own way of leading to happiness. So for example, my friend, he's working from 9 to 5 and when he came home, we'd do gaming and we'd do this nonstop 24/7 the whole week. And he said that's what makes him happy. So that's his reality. And another friend of mine would say that he got to earn a lot of money when he was young, and material gain is what leads to happiness.
Mm-hmm.
So for when you started in Krishna consciousness, you were pretty young. So out of all those options, how did you know that this is the right path? And did you aware of what you are heading towards? And
I definitely didn't. Thank you so much. Yeah, it's a great question. Thank you for that. The spiritual disruptors come in with a message. I already gave you one of the messages, but one of the other main messages they give is that when you look for happiness through material things, when you look for happiness through the body and the mind, one of four things happens. Scenario one, you don't get those things that you're looking for. Frustration. Scenario two, you get those things that you're looking for, but they don't actually bring you the pleasure you thought they would bring you. Frustration. Scenario three, you look for those things, you get those things, they bring you the pleasure, but then it disappears. Frustration. Scenario four, You could look for those things, you get those things, it brings you pleasure, it stays for quite some time, but then it's tied in with some negative things that you didn't want. Frustration. The spiritual disruptors come in and they say, it will never be perfect. There will always be something missing. The spiritual disruptors come in and they say, to be happy, people say you need wealth, time, and health. When you're young, you have time, you have health, you don't have any wealth. Frustration. When you're in middle age, you have wealth, you still have your health, ain't got any time. Frustration. When you're old, you have loads of time, you have loads of wealth, you don't have your health anymore. Frustration. The spiritual disruptors come in and say, whatever you do in this world, you'll be snookered. You won't satisfy the heart. You won't find the satiation of your consciousness that you're looking for. And the spiritual disruptors come in and say 99.9% of people will just accept it and say, you got to accept it. That's life. But the spiritual disruptors come in and say, there's one person that may come forward out of many thousands and say, I don't want to settle for a type B happiness. I don't want to settle for second class happiness, pleasure. I want to try and find out whether there's something beyond all of that. And those are the people that begin the spiritual journey. So we're not sitting here saying there's no pleasure in the material world, but we're saying those pleasures are in division two. You can be the top of Division 2, but you're still in Division 2. You want to go to the Premier League? You want to experience something beyond? That is for the one who's ready to disrupt their life. That's for the one who's ready to question why. That's for the one who's ready to embrace the discomfort of challenging everything that the world has told you should be. That is the person who goes on the spiritual journey. And that is the person that may make it. And that could be you. Thank you very much for your time, and thank you for being so open-minded. And,